And Smashville, good morning, and thank you for joining us. It is indeed Morning Drive on this Friday, ESPN 102.5 The Game. We are broadcasting live from the Omni Nashville Hotel inside of Kitchen Notes for the next 4 hours. Nick Cale with you. Braden Gall is going wedding crashing in Birmingham, so he'll be off the grid today. Derek Mason will be here shortly. Chase McKay back at the Game Nashville Studios, presented by Wholesale Inc. Mount Juliet. We are absolutely loaded, and how about this? You know, it's funny. The thing about life is, here's one thing that's so beautiful, is when you can win a championship or you can reach the pinnacle of your profession, and you know what? You say, I've had enough. I'm walking away from my employer. I'm stepping aside. I'm riding off into the sunset. And then you know what? I'm going to go to the number one market in the country, the biggest city in America, and I'm going to coach the New York Islanders, or maybe we'll just call them the Brooklyn Islanders, because Barry Trotz yesterday, his unemployment lasted all of a handful of days. He has been introduced as the new head coach of the New York Islanders. And how about this? A guy who was pretty much ran out of Washington, D.C. all season long. The writing was on the wall. His fate was sealed. He's going to be done after they lose in the second round yet again. What do they do? Washington Capitals, Alex Ovechkin, Braden Holtby, Barry Trotz, they win the Stanley Cup Final, and then Barry Trotz steps aside, only to now be the new head coach of the New York Islanders. And as soon as I saw that news come out yesterday on social media, I'm thinking there's no way he takes that job if John Tavares is not coming back.
Completely agree.
Yeah, I mean, you got to think he is the most highly sought-after player on the open market. And I've got to believe you don't take that job unless Tavares is coming back. Chase McCabe, what was your reaction yesterday when you saw our boy Barry Trotz heading to New York City?
Well, I'm going to be honest. I was slightly surprised just because I kind of thought he might take a year off. I think, you know, he's smart to go and do the interview. Lou Lamoriello is a guy that has been around for a long time. He's been successful. He kind of got ran out of Toronto this past season, so now he takes over as the Islanders GM. But I kind of thought he'd go meet with them. He'd decide, you know what, I'm going to take the year off. And then he'd have his pick, because whether it's a team letting go of a coach in December or something like that, he could go there, or he could just wait a year. But I guess the money, the circumstances, I mean, that is an up-and-coming team, especially if John Tavares stays. And then there's been some rumors of some free agents that could possibly land there, John Carlson being one of those, a guy that he's very familiar with, having just won the cup with him in Washington. So I guess it's a good fit. You have two institutions in Barry Trotz and Lou Lamoriello that have now teamed up. We'll see how it turns out.
It will be the 2018-2019 Lou Lamoriello-Barry Trotz disrespect tour as they unite together in Brooklyn to team up with the Islanders. And in all likelihood, I would think, this is just an assumption, John Tavares stays. So you're right, they should be a very compelling team. And now here's the thing that really hits home with the Preds. Barry Trotz will host the Nashville Predators on October 6th. So if you're keeping score at home, that is 106 days from today. 106 days from today, the Nashville Predators and Peter Laviolette take on Barry Trotz and the New York Islanders. So put that down in your planner, in your iPhone, set a reminder, set a date. And the other thing that was big yesterday, Chase McCabe, and this is kind of, maybe it's coincidence, maybe it's irony, but you had mentioned that you were very intrigued about the Preds possibly trying to pursue Wayne Simmonds of the Flyers, who is reportedly on the market and could be dealt at any point throughout this summer. And you were saying, you know, you would like to bring him in and make a deal. Now, ironically, yes, the Flyers and the Preds will play in Smashville on New Year's Day, one of three New Year's Day NHL games. The only question is, based on yesterday's conversation, will Wayne Simmonds be in the orange and black or the blue and gold?
Ooh, and that's very intriguing. You know, I kind of got some things stirred up on Twitter yesterday because I put it out there. I said, I'm making this Twitter official that I am all in on the Predators acquiring Wayne Simmonds for the right price if he is available. Now, you know, when I say it like that, I'm not reporting anything. I'm not saying that, you know, they're going after him. I'm just saying I would like them to. And, of course, people are like, oh, wait, where is that? Is that out there? And I'm having to, you know, explain. But I think he'd be a great addition. I think a lot of teams kind of feel that way. I won't be surprised at all if Philly trades him. You know, is he going to come here? Who knows? But I think that there is a good chance that they deal him, and it could be in the next few days with the draft starting this evening.
All right, let's hear from New York Islanders head coach Barry Trotz. He was on a conference call yesterday about his new opportunity, and he was asked what excites him about the new venture with the Islanders.
Well, number one is, if you know anything about what Lou Lamoriello, his background and what he does, and he, you know how he's going to do what it takes to win, that got me excited right away, just the leadership up top. And then obviously a good roster with good foundations, and I think it could be turned around really well with his leadership for sure.
And I'll tell you the one thing that I kind of do like about this, A, I'm a Barry Trotz fan, so I'm happy that he ended up winning the Stanley Cup over an expansion team like Vegas. And here's the other thing that's kind of good about it, and I don't know if you ever really fear an opposing coach, because, you know, when you're talking about players changing locations, you're like, oh, I hope he doesn't go to this division or this conference because we have to deal with him X amount of times a year. At least he's actually going to be in the Eastern Conference, Chase, so it's not like there's going to be, you know, it's not like he's coming to the Central Division in the Western Conference and he's going to be, you know, part of a rivalry against the Preds. Preds, Islanders, there's no real history there.
Right, and I do want to respond to something, because I was listening to Jared and the GM yesterday, Jared and Hal Gill, and Jared said that the Predators dodged a bullet by Barry Trotz staying in the East and going to the Islanders and not being around for a Chicago or a St. Louis. Look, I'm not taking anything away from what Barry Trotz has accomplished. He's one of my favorite people in the world, and I was pulling for him more than anybody to win the Stanley Cup. But I don't know if I completely agree with the whole they dodged a bullet. I think he's a good coach. He would have some tough teams, especially with the type of talent that he could get if he were to go to a Central Division team. But I don't completely agree with Jared on that, because, look, up until this year, he had not gotten out of the second round, and that includes with Alex Ovechkin. They get out of the second round, they win the cup. That's awesome. But I don't agree with the whole they dodged a bullet, just because I think the Predators have a very, very talented team. They have a very talented coach who has won a Stanley Cup, who has gotten this team to the Stanley Cup final. He's won a President's Trophy with them as well. Yep. So I kind of think it's a lot more even keel than maybe Jared was giving him credit for.
Yeah, and how about this? If you're Barry Trotz, you're going from Alex Ovechkin to John Tavares. That's a pretty nice situation from an elite player standpoint. Let's listen. Here is Barry Trotz when he was asked about the John Tavares situation and how much that affected his decision to become the new head coach.
Well, I think what I know of, as I said, what I know of Lou, what I know of John, the opportunity to work with John a little bit for the World Cup of Hockey. And I know what a quality coach he is and players. I think that, you know, I feel strongly that, you know, when Lou gets with John and started to talk, there'd be some real positive things. Obviously, Lou's can execute a plan, a long-term plan that will be very successful. So we can chase the Stanley Cup and win a Stanley Cup.
And that was Barry Trotz on his conference call yesterday talking about the John Tavares situation. So here's a question for Preds fans. Are you happy for Barry Trotz in the Islanders? How good is his situation with John Tavares? And how much of a shock was this to you? Did you anticipate Barry Trotz to be back in action this quickly? 615-737-1025 is the number. 615-737-1025. You can always tweet and follow us at 1025_MD. We will come back. Stupid poll question of the day. Derek Mason is here ready to go. And also, Sean Salisbury, former NFL quarterback, was very, very impressed with Marcus Mariota. How far can Mariota take the Titans? You'll hear his answer when we come back. It is Morning Drive. We're broadcasting live from the Game Nashville Studios, presented by Wholesale Inc. Mount Juliet, out on location this morning, live from the Omni Nashville Hotel inside of Kitchen Notes on ESPN 102.5 The Game and streaming on the Game Nashville app. And welcome back in, Smashville. It's great to have you on this Friday. It is Morning Drive on ESPN 102.5 The Game. We are broadcasting live from the Omni Nashville Hotel inside of Kitchen Notes. Nick Cale, Derek Mason, Chase McCabe with you on this Friday. Braden is in Birmingham for a wedding. D-Mace is here. What's happening, big boy?
What's going on?
You consumed some NBA draft last night?
Yes, I did. It was, and because I was busy yesterday, you know, during a during the morning hours, afternoon. Shoot, I was busy all day yesterday. I didn't get home until
tracking LeBron's flight plan, seeing if his kids were enrolled in schools.
Yeah, I went from, you know, L.A. back here
to Houston.
Houston.
On the private flight, the
exactly.
private jet.
Everywhere LeBron was going, I was going. Come to find out, you went back to Cleveland.
Question will be, is Colin Sexton enough out of Alabama to keep LeGoat in Cleveland? Because that's a pretty good pick.
I don't know if it is, but when you said congrats, you said go Sparty or just Sparty, I'm like, what's going on? Mm-hmm. Then you said the draft.
Yep.
And Jaren Jackson Jr. Got drafted, what, third overall?
Fourth
overall.
To Memphis.
Yeah, to Memphis.
So he'll be in this state.
Get a chance to see him. But then I started to watch more. And Kyle Sexton, I think that's he got to develop an outside shot. He really
does
in the NBA, especially being a, 6'2", 6'3".
Yeah, he's not overly
point
big.
Point guard. He's aggressive. I enjoyed watching him play at Alabama. The kid, he has toughness, grit, but he has to develop a outside game. He has to be able to knock down that three-pointer because he does LeBron no – he doesn't help LeBron in the sense of having another shooter. What Kyrie did was help LeBron have another shooter, another scorer. Kyrie could hit inside, outside, could create his own basket, get to the basket. I've never seen a guy like Kyrie Irving that can get to the basket any time he want, being a 6'3", 6'4", guard, and that's what Kyrie was able to do. Now LeBron didn't have that. He suffered. Is Kyle Sexton that type of player?
Mm-hmm.
Can he be? Possibly. Is he that player now? No. But it might be him running the show by himself, minus LeBron, especially the pitch he gave LeBron yesterday. I mean,
yeah.
And then you don't put a young kid on a spot like that. What is he supposed to say, you know?
All right, so we'll get to some NBA draft stuff coming up in the 9 o'clock hours. We'll go around from all the big storylines in the association last night. But I do want to get to your thoughts. Barry Trotz, the news yesterday, and obviously we talked about him leaving Washington last week. I mean, he was unemployed technically for all of, what, 5 or 6 days. Now the new head coach of the New York Islanders. You get to play with or coach a star in all likelihood, assuming John Tavares stays. Are you surprised that Barry Trotz came back so quickly and didn't take a year off? Or is this a no-brainer when you get possibly one of the best players on the planet?
This is a no-brainer. This is a situation where it's hard for a player to, you know, because Barry's been coaching, head coaching for, what, almost 20 years, if not 20 years now. So if you have a – let's just correlate it to a player. You have a player that's played 15, 17, 18 years. He finally wins that championship. He can ride off in the sunset. He can go and just live his life. I've accomplished what I wanted to accomplish. Now I'm gone.
Mm-hmm.
But for a coach, it's kind of like a professor. Your job is endless. You can coach until either you feel like stopping or you just can't perform at a level that meets the organization's standards and expectations. So I'm not surprised that Barry chose to come back very quickly. He's going to a team right now, and I'm on capfriendly.com and looking at the Islanders cap. It seems as if they will have, and I could be wrong on this one, they could have projected cap space $32 million. I could be wrong on that one, but I'm just reading it.
That's
it
before Tavares.
Yes, it's before Tavares. So
I think the cap that Adam Vingan tweeted yesterday is going to be right around $79 million this year, I believe.
Yeah, so it's going up by about $4.5 million.
Okay.
So they will have some money under the cap to possibly go get players if they need to. Re-sign other players. So I think he's in a situation now where I'm looking at their cap. They have a lot of people coming off the books, a bunch of guys. So this is going to be an opportunity where it's sort of like the Predators. He gets an opportunity to build a team the way he wants it, starting off with a marquee player. So I think this is a perfect opportunity for him. He's in a big market. He go, and if this team is successful,
mm-hmm.
boy, oh boy, will the legend of Barry continue.
Yeah, fifth winningest coach in NHL history. He's got the best coaching record over the last 4 years, 2 President's Trophies, and a Stanley Cup to boot. And oh, by the way, you get John Tavares. not a bad situation. And, you know, you get to live in New York City, which, you know, depending on your lifestyle, is either a really good blessing or just a complete nightmare if you hate traffic and you hate the hustle and bustle. So,
well, their practice facility is pretty is not in the city, right?
I think they're, well, they used to be on Long Island.
Okay.
But now they,
they're going back.
Oh, they are going back?
Eventually. Yeah, it's a
weird
Barclays situation.
They're in the Barclays Center now, aren't they?
Well, they're playing in like four different arenas. No. they're going to play some games in Brooklyn like they have been. Yep. They are going to go back to the old building that has been renovated, and then they're building a new building in Belmont Park, which will be their permanent home eventually.
All right, there you have it. We're going to get to Sean Salisbury's comments on Marcus Mariota because I want to give this a full run coming up in a little bit because we've got Josh Ward's going to join us at the bottom of the hour as he does every Friday to talk Vols. But Chase McKay back in the Game Nashville studios. It is stupid poll question of the daytime because Braden is out today. He is attending a wedding in Birmingham, Alabama this weekend, and that is going to lead us to our stupid poll question of the day.
Now, the stupid poll question of the day.
All right, I think I've voiced my displeasure in the last couple of weeks with weddings in the month of June.
Yeah.
You know, outside of, you know, your own wedding, Braden is now on, I think, his third wedding in the last 2 weeks or his second in the last 3 weeks. But either way, it's too much, at least in my opinion. And I'm just wondering, we got to come up with a question based off of weddings. From the standpoint of a guy who's already gone down the aisle himself, how much is too much for a guy when it comes to weddings?
I think that's the question. How many weddings is too many to attend?
And I'm not talking in your lifetime.
Yeah,
because
I'm just saying,
I don't want to attend one
ever again.
In one summer.
How many weddings is too many weddings to attend?
So if we're going to look at weddings season as like May, June, July, and June is really considered, like, if you're going to get married and you try to book one for June, you might have to book it like 2 years in advance because wedding planners have things just booked up left and right. June is like prime real estate season. I would say in a 3 month stretch, the over under should be 1.5.
Wow, that's Nick. What if you are a guy that or girl that loves to get out, have a bunch of friends, or, you know, work at a corporation or business that have a bunch of people employed, you know, a bunch of people, and, you know, they're young professionals, and they're getting married.
Yeah, well, like,
so
here's the thing,
there
though,
could be 4 or 5 weddings.
Can I just, like, if I would get the wedding invitation.
I just think you're jealous you're not getting invited to weddings.
Yeah, I think so.
No, I don't want to go. That's the thing.
Nick,
I'm glad I'm not.
I think you want to go, seriously.
No, I have no interest.
Yeah, I have none. I think you want to put on your chino suit, man.
I don't want to get my Indochino suit.
Yeah, Indochino suit.
It looks pretty good on me.
Derek, back me up on this, because I think you and I might be on the same wavelength. I would love to be invited to weddings because I am a young, eligible, single bachelor.
Yeah, there you go. I get a chance to dress up, sit in the back of the room.
Yeah, but, like, you know, you get the wedding invite, and then you got to accept it. And if you don't, if you decline, then you feel
that's why
bad
you put no.
It.
You put maybe. You put maybe, and then they're going to send you another
I'll just
closer
send you,
to the
I'll
wedding.
Just send you a bunch of steak knives. Give me your address. I'll get you your wedding gift and go on and do your thing. I got no interest.
Okay. Here's the question. Since you said that, since you threw that caveat in, do you A, go to the wedding, or B, just send a gift?
Well, see, I think
go to the registry.
I think the trade-off of giving a gift, though, usually you have to give a gift that is equivalent to what the plate of the dinner costs. I think that's kind of like the unwritten rule.
I guess so.
So, you know, if, you know, the plate of dinner is, I don't know, $50 or whatever, and you got your choice between chicken, fish, and beef or whatever, you know, like, I'm just tired of the whole process. Italian wedding soup, I've done it all. Open bar for the first hour. It's just, it's exhausting.
I don't think
make that hour count.
Stay
at
the bar.
It's too time consuming. It wipes out a whole day, you know.
It doesn't really, Nick, it's a big party,
I got to put a suit on, and I'm sweating, and it's just
Nick,
disgusting.
Nick,
you're just a wedding.
I am anti-wedding.
You're a wedding Grinch.
You remember the drug campaign in the 80s, Just Say No?
Yeah.
I'm going to start a wedding campaign, Just Say No.
Wow, Nick.
We're going to have it trending on Twitter by 10 o'clock.
Hey, if anybody wants to contact Nick, it's at Nick Kale.
Or 615-737-1025.
Exactly.
Nick,
this is for you.
Rule number 6. Do not sit in the corner and sulk. It draws attention to you in a negative way. Draw attention to yourself, but on your own terms.
Exactly. So you want to draw attention to yourself, wait till we get off air at 10 o'clock.
Okay.
And then you can scream all you want to about Wade.
Sounds good.
No.
Sounds
but over-under, right? So over-under.
Over-under 1.5,
I think. No, 2.
2?
2. Over-under.
Well, let's make it 2.5. We can't
have
a push.
Yeah, 2.5.
No
two
pushes.
And a half. Okay, 2.5. Over-under. But what's the – it's like the half. 3. Let's make it 3. Because then
no,
that's
you gotta
interesting.
Have the hook. You gotta have
you
the
gotta
hook.
Have the hook in there. You gotta have the half, so there's nobody
okay.
can.
3.5.
Oh well, 3.5 is a way. That's an easy under. That's stealing money for me.
But some people go to more than 3 weddings.
All right, we'll put it up on Twitter at 1025_MD. We'll get some phone calls as well. Coming up next, Josh Ward from WNML in Knoxville, and it was a sad week in Knoxville. We'll explain and we'll talk to Josh about it. Coming up next, we are live from the Omni Nashville Hotel inside of Kitchen Notes on ESPN 102.5 The Game and streaming on the Game Nashville app. And welcome back into Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5 The Game. We are broadcasting live from the Omni Nashville Hotel inside of Kitchen Notes. It's great to have you in on this Friday. Nick Cale and Derek Mason with you. Braden off to Birmingham for a weekend wedding. We will certainly get Josh's thoughts on that. And all things Vols related as he joins us every Friday here on the show. Josh Ward, WNML in Knoxville. Good morning, Josh. How are you?
Hey, I'm doing great. Great to be with you guys.
Good to have you in. Obviously, sad news we'll begin with, the passing of legendary Vols broadcaster John Ward. You obviously are very connected to the Vols and Knoxville in general. Just how big of a loss is this for the volunteer community when you have a voice of over 3 decades that passes away?
Yeah, you have multiple generations that are connected to John Ward in that they would, growing up, watching Tennessee football or Tennessee basketball would turn the TV down and the radio up. I'm sure you guys have heard that. But also, you know, so many people that he was literally the eyes and ears of what was going on because we didn't always have TV on our phones and games available anytime we want, anywhere we want. It was much more difficult to find a lot of games that were on TV. So you had to rely on John Ward, and he did such a spectacular job of painting the picture. So I think today so many people, when they think back to their favorite Tennessee plays, their favorite moments, whether it's a Jeff Powell run in the Sugar Bowl or a Johnny Jones run in 1983 against Alabama or plays during a terrific run in the 1990s, if you see the play, a lot of Tennessee fans probably can then start to recite what John Ward said. Or on the flip side, if you're listening to the radio this week and you hear those famous John Ward calls, then in your mind you can see the play again unfold because of the way that John Ward so beautifully described it. He was right up there at the top among the best all-time broadcasters, and he's missed by a lot of people.
Now looking at the Vols, and off the heels of the NBA draft, obviously Tennessee, everyone chose to, I believe, return back to a team that was really good last year that found themselves in a position to challenge for the SEC championship. Looking at this team moving forward, I know they announced Wednesday that they signed a 6'8 forward, Burns, out of Rock Hill, South Carolina. How does this team look moving forward during the season? Is this going to be another team that Coach Barnes had last year where they competed and competed at a high level and could be the favorites, not just to win the SEC championship, but can be a contender for a Final Four and possibly a NCAA championship?
Yeah, I think that's the expectation for Tennessee this year. That's going to be, well, all of that, I think, will be goals for Tennessee's basketball team when they hit the floor this fall. I think they were goals this past year, and Tennessee was able to accomplish a lot more than most expected. Now I think this year more people will talk about that with Tennessee going in. I think with the preseason polls, you'll see Tennessee somewhere in that top 5 to top 10 mix. And think about what a difference a year makes. Last year, Tennessee was picked 13th in the SEC. So now Tennessee could be a top 10 team nationally. But it is because so many players are coming back. The only rotational player that Tennessee has to replace from last season is James Daniel, who did a nice job off the bench, but he is replaceable. And then I think at the guard position where he was coming off the bench, it's more about the progress that Jordan Bone, Jordan Bowden, and Lamonte Turner, three guys who played bigger roles than Daniel last year anyway, what they can do. But a lot of it is Admiral Schofield's coming back. He is a guy that tested the NBA waters, went through the draft process with really the full expectation that he would return, and he's doing that. And last year, I thought Schofield made a big leap to be the player that he was on the wing. He can defend multiple positions. If that can continue, if he can continue to develop his offensive game, and then Grant Williams, who was an SEC Player of the Year, if he continues to expand his offensive game as well, if he can add more range to his jump shot, there's still room to grow for key players on a team that shared an SEC title. That's why I think expectations will be really high for Tennessee this year. Now, with those expectations going up, Tennessee will have to be ready to one, take on a really good schedule, really challenging schedule, both non-conference and what Tennessee will face in the SEC, but also recognize that last year there wasn't much attention paid to Tennessee. This year, every team is going to notice when Tennessee's on the schedule, so it's a different kind of challenge, and can they recreate that chemistry that was, I think, pretty special last year? I think they have a really good chance to do that, but more competition within the roster. Derek Walker's a year older. DJ Burns, as you mentioned, he signed to come in and try to play right away. So there's a lot to put together, but Rick Barnes has a lot of pieces to try to do that.
Josh Ward, WNML Knoxville, joining us here on Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Yesterday, Josh, Braden and I were getting into a discussion, and we got into a debate about where Jeremy Pruitt slots in, because Athlon Sports ranked their SEC coaches from 1 to 14, and also all of their coaches 1 to 130, and Pruitt came in 13th out of 14 in the SEC, and I believe 94th overall in the country. I want to get your thoughts on both of those rankings, both locally within the conference and then on a grand stage.
Yeah, you know, I think it's really difficult when you're talking about a guy that is about to become a head coach for the first time. It's, of course, projection that you're trying to put in there when you haven't seen him coach a game yet. And I think a lot of times, especially in the SEC where you do have quality programs and expectations are really high for a lot of these schools, that you start to think, okay, well, what should they be? And Jeremy Pruitt should be a good head coach because he's at Tennessee. You would think that. But then you start to look around the conference. Well, Dan Mullen's obviously more proven. So they're the obvious names you're going to go with: Mullen, Malzahn, obviously Saban's at the top, Kirby Smart with what he did a year ago. You know, but think about 2 years ago, where would you have put Kirby Smart? Well, you didn't know where he would have been. I think maybe there's probably like the Will Muschamp factor. Will Muschamp was a guy that did get hired at Florida with the expectation as a first-year coach that he would have success, and it didn't work out to the level that people thought that it would at Florida. So that's probably caused more caution. So you get to Kirby Smart and say, okay, prove it. And he has, so he makes a big jump. I think if Tennessee's able to be a six-win team or so this year, if they go 5-7, I don't think it's a big deal. But if Tennessee's 6-6 or 7-5, certainly if they're better, then next year when rankings come out, you'll see Jeremy Pruitt make a jump. And then if he's able to win at an even higher level, then he can get into the mix with the best coaches. But I think right now, I think it's fair to keep Jeremy Pruitt probably lower. Now, you can also have it from a number of different conversations. If you want to just rank, I would probably take all Power 5 coaches that are doing it for the first time and have them lower than guys that have done it and have done something to succeed, not just guys that have coached games and lost them, but guys that have won something. So, yeah, Joe Moorhead at Mississippi State, I'd probably have him a little bit lower because while he's been, I think, a really good offense coordinator and has had success as a head coach at Fordham, this is a different level, so I'd have him near the back. I'd have Chad Morris probably near the back because he's been a head coach, but this is a different level at Arkansas. And then you have guys that need to do more, Matt Luke at Ole Miss, Derek Mason at Vanderbilt. But if you were, let's say you were to draft coaches, well, then I think that's more based on potential. I say that coming off the NBA draft last night. But if you were to say, okay, which coach would you just hire? Well, that's projecting forward, not counting as much what they've done to this point. So I think if you're just ranking them, and a lot of that's going to be resume, I think it's natural to have the guys that haven't done it yet near the back.
All right, Josh, last question before we get you out of here. Braden is off today. I feel like he's on his fifth wedding in the last 5 weeks. How many weddings is too many weddings to attend in one wedding season?
That's a good question. I've been in that position where you start to get 4, 5, 6, and you're like, man, when's the last time we were home? Because we've got a wedding to get to in town, or we've got to travel, and then you start to look at the travel budget. Like, well, actually, our vacation this year is wedding season. But I'm in the position, you know, we have a 4-month-old at home, so we just had our our son a few months ago. We're more in the baby season, so we go to baby showers. We don't go to wedding showers right
okay.
now. We have a couple of weddings on the books for next year, so I think we're excited about the fact that we're going to dive back into it. So I'm kind of like I'm the coach that sits out, you know, and he goes on TV for a year, and he recharges the battery, and then he wants to jump back into it. So if you'd asked me a couple of years ago, I was probably getting burned out, and I would have said, oh, man, that five's too many. But now I'm sitting out, so I'm excited to jump back in next year.
So you're getting the itch for wedding, huh? You're getting the itch for a wedding again.
Yeah, you know, in fact, we had some really good friends that got married, just a couple of weeks after Owen is our mm-hmm. son, after he was born, and it was an 8 or 9 hour trip. It would have been a car ride, and as you guys know, taking Owen wasn't really going to happen on that trip, so we missed the wedding. So I think part of that's too, we missed out. So yeah, we're like the coach. We see our buddies in the championship game. We want to dive back in.
Josh, good stuff, man. We appreciate the time as always. Have a good weekend. We'll talk to you next Friday.
Hey, thanks a lot, guys.
You got it. Josh Ward, WNML in Knoxville, joins us every Friday at 6:30 on Morning Drive. All right, when we come back, Sean Salisbury was on the show yesterday, former NFL quarterback, and he had some glowing things to say about Marcus Mariota. You'll hear that when we come back. And also, I kind of ran into some trouble this morning, a little personal issue that we will make public, because my life's an open book. Mm-hmm. We'll bring that up on the show next and just really we'll judge how much of a dope I really am. That's coming up next. It is Morning Drive. We're broadcasting live from the Omni Nashville Hotel inside of Kitchen Notes on ESPN 102.5 The Game and streaming on the Game Nashville app. Welcome back into Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Nick Kale and Derek Mason with you. Chase McKay back at the Game Nashville studios, presented by Wholesale Inc. Mount Juliet. Braden is crashing another wedding. Good for him. We will get to my personal dilemma coming up in just a couple of minutes before we wrap up the first hour. But let's kind of get into one of the things that I thought really stood out yesterday. Now, we had Sean Salisbury on the show yesterday at 8:30, former NFL quarterback, former NFL analyst on ESPN for many years, was great with John Clayton together, and he's now doing Afternoon Drive in Houston, and he runs a quarterback clinic down in Texas. And we asked him about Marcus Mariota and what exactly Marcus is, and here is what he had to say.
I'm a Mariota fan. I think he is a special skill set. There are some mechanical issues that I would have liked to see fixed, and I know widening his base and doing those things when you watch him play, and it will help him. It'll help him get the ball out. It'll help him anchor that back foot. And I know spending time in the offseason with the receivers, Tom House, and all those things that Marcus has done this offseason, which I love when a quarterback decides, what's the next level of my game? The next level, I do this good, I want to do it great. The key for a good quarterback is not to say, I mean, you know what his strengths are. Great quarterbacks recognize their weakness and they work on it. It's like if you're a great driver of the golf ball, what do most amateurs do? They'll go hit 4 or 5 other shots and then they'll grab the big dog, the driver, and hit it on the range. And you're like, well, you already hit that. Go spend 8 hours in the bunker, because during a golf round as an amateur, you can't get out of the bunker. Go putt for 5 hours. It's like a quarterback. Well, we need to widen your base. We need to get the ball out quicker. We need to adjust your front shoulder. Well, go work on it. Go work on the things we know you do, and Marcus has. You know, by doing that, the timing, I think it's important.
That was Sean Salisbury on with us yesterday, and in the interview, he alluded to the fact that he believes, now he didn't say it was a prediction or it was going to happen this year, but Marcus Mariota is good enough to win a Super Bowl. Do you believe that? Because we were talking to Jamie Dukes on Wednesday, and he made the comparison that right now Marcus is Alex Smith.
And people, when I say this, please don't think that I am, you know, displeased with Marcus or don't like Marcus or whatever the case may be. I think Marcus is a good quarterback. He's one of the better young quarterbacks in the National Football League. But I'm going by – you know, the body of work thus far. And you can blame it on offensive coordinator. You can blame it on not having weapons, whatever the case may be. But he's had a very inconsistent, you know, 3 or 4 years. It's been up, it's been down, it's been up, it's been in the middle, up, down, in the middle. And it's never gone from a point where first year, yes, second year, get better, third year, get better, then fourth year, boom. It's been okay, first year.
You haven't seen that steady progression.
And then back down again. And people want to blame it on the offensive coordinator. But, again, the offensive coordinator don't throw the ball. The offensive coordinator calls the plays. Now it's up to the quarterback to find an open guy. Now whether they got him enough weapons, you know, that's debatable. But you can't go from, you know, throwing for almost close to 3,500 yards, if not 3,500 yards, one season with one offense, and then the next following year with the same offense, you know, you add some more players, and you dip below that, and your touchdown to interception ratio, you know, goes down. You know, you throw more interceptions than you do touchdowns. That is not all on the offensive coordinator. That does have a little bit to do with the quarterback and his decision-making. But no one's really looking at that because everyone's blaming it on, you know, Robiski and Malarkey and their offense. Well, a lot, you know, it's fit to me, it's in a pie. Everybody has their
piece.
Their piece, whether it be the offensive coordinator, the head coach, the running game, or Marcus.
Right.
Everybody has their piece of the pie that they contributed to. But here's the thing with Marcus. The question was, can he win a Super Bowl for the Titans? My answer is no. But if you surround him with more people, you surround him with playmakers on the outside. We don't know if they have them yet. We don't know if Corey Davis can be that guy. If you pair him with a playmaker on the outside, the running game gets back to where it was 2 years ago, then yes, he can win a Super Bowl. Guys that win Super Bowls, Brady, Breeze, Rodgers, Manning, Roethlisberger, those are guys that can win you a Super Bowl.
Despite
anything else. Brady has proven it. He can win you a Super Bowl despite anything else.
So you think that Marcus can get there with the right help around him, but he will never be top five quarterback. I'll put the whole thing
he
on
can't.
My back.
No, at this point in time, what I've seen, no.
Even though he did go on the road to Kansas City and single-handedly beat
Kansas,
the Chiefs?
They lost their tight end. Their defense is horrible. People look at this Kansas City game and say, well, he put the team on his back. Yes, he did make some plays. I'm not saying that. But this Kansas City team, seriously, people? This Kansas City team was near the bottom in total defense.
Mm-hmm.
They lost their best offensive weapon. Kelsey. They didn't have anything else. Yes, did he mount a comeback? Did he decide to say, you know what? I'm gonna put this offense on my back and we're gonna win a football game. Yes, he did that. But do you expect him to why couldn't he have done that the next following week then?
Right.
If that was indeed the case.
Right.
You know,
well,
let's
look at it this way as well, because and I agree with you. Look, he's never going to be Brady. He's never going to be Rodgers, Breeze, Roethlisberger, Peyton Manning. I mean, those are basically once-in-a-lifetime generational quarterbacks. You know, maybe Ben Roethlisberger is not a generational quarterback, but he's going to go to the Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
Here's the thing with Marcus, though. Can he be one of these guys that – because remember, this is the second overall pick in a draft. So I think I know
he's
we are,
Matt Ryan,
and I think and I
can
you know,
Matt Ryan if, win you a Super Bowl by himself?
I don't know. It's hard to gauge that because he's got Julio Jones.
That's what I'm saying.
He's got a lot of weapons.
Minus
blew,
Julio, okay.
They blew a 28-3
yeah.
lead.
But that really wasn't. If the running back picks up the blitz,
right. No, it wasn't Matt Ryan's fault.
But minus Julio Jones, before Julio Jones became this explosive guy. Matt Ryan, could he get you to a Super Bowl? No, he couldn't.
No, the first couple of years
yeah,
he played because he came out the same year as Flacco.
Absolutely. He took him to an NFC championship game, but they didn't win.
Yeah, and then the Falcons pretty much traded away every asset they had
exactly.
to get Julio.
Absolutely. And then when they got Julio Jones and Julio started to flourish, then he had the guys in the backfield. He had weapons. He had legitimate bona fide weapons around him. He had guys that were top five at their position, whether it be Julio Jones, the running back.
He had Tony Gonzalez for a while.
Gonzalez. He had guys that were top five, top ten in their position.
Yep.
And then the defense was playing well. So if you're telling me, if I'm to think that Matt Ryan can't win a Super Bowl by himself, well, Matt Ryan has shown me more than Marcus. So what makes me think that Marcus can win a Super Bowl by himself? Yes, Marcus can win a Super Bowl. I'm not saying he can't. Yes, he can. He has the tools. But he has to have people around him. He has to get a bona fide wide receiver. He has to the running game has to get back to where it was 2 years ago. The offensive line has to stay healthy. He's not the guy that can just, you know, for 16 games and then three or four in the playoffs to take his team and guide them to a Super Bowl solely by himself. There's only one or two quarterbacks in the NFL that can do that at this point in time, and I believe it's really only two, Brady and Aaron Rodgers. Those are the only two guys that I believe right now can lead a team by themselves to the Super Bowl. Now, will they win it? I don't know, but they can lead a team by themselves to the Super Bowl. Marcus is not at that point yet. Will he ever get to that point? I don't know. If I'm saying he's more Matt Ryan than Tom Brady or Aaron Rodgers, then no, he can't.
But I'll tell you what, I'll take
he
that.
He can.
If he's Matt Ryan, I'll take that.
But he can if you get him some bona fide weapons around him. Defense plays well. Running game's good. Yes, he can get you to a playoff.
Then the pressure is on John Robinson to equip him with enough weapons and enough help on both sides of the ball so that, okay, if he is Matt Ryan, he's got the pieces around him necessary to get the ultimate goal.
Yes, absolutely. So, in theory, yes, he can get you to a Super Bowl. But Marcus has to have guys around him that are going to help him when he's not having a good game. He just can't, you know, for 16 games, put a team on his back and say, let's go. Yep. There's only two quarterbacks in the NFL at this point in time that can do that. And their name is Brady and Rodgers.
And I'll tell you what, and you and I are on the same page. I know Brady seems to disagree. I don't think the combination of Corey Davis, Rashard Matthews, Tywan Taylor, Tajay Sharp, and Jonnu Smith is enough. I mean, you've got Delanie Walker, mm-hmm. which certified stud. I believe in Corey Davis. I think he's going to get to become a solid player. But the reality is there's not enough around him right now from a skill player standpoint on the perimeter for him to even get to Matt Ryan level.
And this is what I don't want people to confuse is that in this new offense, I think this new offense is geared for people to catch a lot of footballs.
Mm-hmm. Spread the wealth.
Yeah, spread the wealth. But don't equate a lot of catches and yardage to being a guy that's affecting the game. I would rather have a guy like Julio Jones that catches five balls or four balls, but he's affecting the game because now I got to shift everything over to him. He's making a deep ball catch for like 30 or 40 yards, but then the rest of them are maybe 15, 10-yard plays. I would rather have a guy than a guy that's catching, you know, 10 balls and only getting you 10 yards a pop. That guy can't do anything for me. And to me right now, that's where the Tennessee Titans are at. They got a bunch of guys that are basically all the same. One has the potential to stand above all of them, and that's Corey Davis. But right now they have a bunch of guys that are first down getters. They're not guys that can stretch the field. They're not guys that are going to scare the secondary. They are guys that are going to catch, you know, 7-8 balls, but they're not going to be an impact in the game. Mm-hmm. They're just not going to be.
All right, when we come back, I have to solicit our audience for some serious help. I'll explain when we come back. It's Morning Drive on ESPN 102.5 The Game and streaming on the Game Nashville app.